Hello, my name is Chantal Cecile Kira, and I would like to welcome you to the MomsFightingAutism.com conference, Get Educated About Autism. I'm also the founder of AutismCollege.com, which is co-sponsoring this conference put on by MomsFightingAutism.com. Right now, I'm really excited to introduce to you someone who can make a difference in your child's life through the use of color. My guest today, right now, is Lauren S. Henry, who is a color expert and sensory design specialist. She's also the president and founder of With a Brush of Love, a company that transforms lives through their surroundings, particularly those diagnosed with autism and special needs. This is accomplished by focusing on the sensory elements that surround us every day to support the individual needs of each client. I'm going to be talking about her more in a minute and ask her a few questions. But right now, I'm going to explain a little bit more about the topic, effectiveness of color. She'll be talking about how to discover the impact color has on all of us, particularly those diagnosed on the autism spectrum. Colors can often inadvertently impede one's ability to focus, concentrate, relax, and decompress, or simply connect in a positive and communicative way. Our sensory surroundings have much more bearing over our attitudes and abilities than we realize. You will learn how to discern what colors, shades, and hues work best for your child's specific needs as well as your own. You will see how all the other sensory elements such as lighting, texture, scent, sound, spatial surroundings, plants, and more can change everything. Creating an environment that works for you is fundamental to one rising to their ultimate potential and achieving their goals much more easily. Welcome, Lauren.
Thank you so much. I'm really thrilled to be a part of Autism College and this whole conference today. I think it's an amazing opportunity for people.
Well, I was really amazed when I heard about you. You've been invited as a guest designer on both HGTV's Kidspace and ABC's Extreme Makeover Home Edition. And aren't you also creating your own TV show now?
Yes, we have a show called Room to Be Different in the works, which we're very excited about, which would finally show how parents can feel empowered and inspired and really hopeful about making an immediate difference for their children within their home atmosphere. I've been really frustrated just because it seems like there's so much unnecessary struggle. Things are hard enough. That if parents could start to learn how they can make an immediate difference for their family and their children, literally, in, you know, overnight, days, weeks to months, as an example, a child going from not sleeping through the night to sleeping, that's a huge difference within the family and for parents to feel really empowered to do something that doesn't have to be so complicated. And that's what this would be about, education and empowerment.
It's really a great idea, and when I heard about you, I said immediately, I have to have Lauren at this conference because, most people know about my son Jeremy, who's 22, but I always talk about how important sensory motor things are with him, but you know how much our kids are always looking at color, and we never think that much about the environment, and it's a big struggle even at school just with the sensory and the lighting and all that kind of thing, but at home, too, we have to think about these issues. And so it's really cool to see a designer who can help us figure out these things for our children. Now, Lauren has a book called Unique Kids, Unique Surroundings. I think that was released in September 2009.
That's correct, yes. And it's on our website. It's on Amazon. I really appreciate you mentioning that. But it's very simple. It's an easy, enjoyable read from what I've heard. And it's only about 60 pages. It's a manual, if you will, to make things really easy in terms of a parent being able to go out and acquire the things that they need without it being overly complicated and figuring out how to do the things that we do on a much slightly smaller level, but still one that is extremely impactful and has, again, immediate results for their kids. And that's what that's about. The book is something that should just make it easy for parents to say, okay, what did she say about lighting or what kind of plant? The picture is right there, the exact brand name or the exact type of something you might need, whether it's paint or lighting, et cetera, and so forth, is listed there. So it's something that's really easy to take with you or read up on and figure out how to utilize it in terms of your own family needs.
Okay, and your website is www.brushoflove.com, correct?
Correct, yes.
Okay, so I have to say that I'm going to run out and buy this book because I know that I have some challenges with Jeremy that I would like to look over, and I've been really thinking about that ever since I heard about Lauren saying, oh my gosh, all these things I never really thought about specifically at home with Jeremy, or I always put off taking care of, because, you know, we don't have that much money when we have kids with autism, and
right.
We always think that the last thing we want to do is redecorate, or but sometimes some simple things can really help a lot. So what are you going to tell us today, Lauren?
Well, what I'm going to do is share a bit of information about, as I mentioned, the effectiveness of color, but all of the senses combined, especially when you sort of are looking at a space from an aesthetic point of view. But most of us rarely ever consciously think about how it affects us from a functional point of view, productivity, concentration, focus, connectivity, one's sustainable energy, all of these kinds of things really are affected a great deal by our environment and something, as you said, we take for granted and we frequently overlook. So I'm just going to start off by introducing my company with a brush of love, and we're looking at the first slide that introduces our logo, and basically now I'm going to start off with a segue that Chantel began explaining in terms of the classroom, and that's how I started in this field. I was a teacher. I started as a substitute teacher for several years, and if many of you are looking at the slides with me, you will notice that this is very typical, these types of rooms in the classroom. Clutter, color, overstimulation. Obviously, we know that our teachers need to have aids around them to help teach. But also one of the main issues now is that teachers are so overwhelmed having huge classrooms of 30 and more even, or 25 and more, which is a very large classroom. But plus they're asked to teach several different subjects beyond what they would normally be, you know, expected to teach. And so a lot of people want to have all the aids around them, all the different things on the wall, different subject material available out, whether it be books, whether it be the kids' work, plus all the other elements that have to do with teaching. You also have fluorescent lighting, you have chairs, you have work, you have educational material, things that you use, and it becomes basically too much, even for the teachers. So that visual chaos is really affecting everybody's ability to focus, as is the lighting. And that's something that's very typical and very frustrating to a teacher, knowing that the environment needs to enhance and support what they're doing and allowing the kids to focus. And as you can see, it's not very helpful in terms of doing that.
Well, even Temple Grandin speaks a lot about how it was easier in the 50s because the classrooms were very austere.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have all this visual distraction. And she said it's really hard for a lot of kids nowadays with the ADD and the autism to focus when there's so much visual attraction or distraction going on, even in the mainstream classrooms.
Absolutely. And the irony is, Temple is right that, you know, when it's more minimal, less is definitely more. That being said, going from this kind of element, this kind of surrounding, and then having a child removed and put into that very kind of cold, austere environment where it's kind of gray, there's one chair, there's one desk, there's nothing on the wall, it can be really very alienating and have the opposite effect where it really creates a lot of anxiety in the child, which is something I noticed as a teacher. All of a sudden, certain kids who needed more assistance would be removed and placed from this kind of environment to an environment that was the polar opposite and really created a lot of anxiety, just overall angst and discomfort for these kids, almost as though they were being punished, which they weren't. They're not doing anything wrong. They're being who they are. But the environment doesn't serve them in either scenario, nor does it serve any of the more quote-unquote average nor typical children who, by the way, are simply finding their own ways of compensating. I wouldn't say that this is really helpful or advantageous for any child.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So now I'm just going to take you into something that may seem very, this takes a minute, so give me a moment. Sometimes it slows down. Let's try something else. I apologize. Our slides are having a little bit of difficulty here.
Are you going to show us what a nicer a class?
Well, I'm going to take you to another slide that is it just doesn't want to work. Let's try down here. It worked a moment ago when we checked. Sorry,
yes.
Folks. Okay, here we are. So what I'm showing you right now is scrubs. And I'm taking you there to sort of give you a little bit of a basis for color. Before scrubs became very fashionable, where there's a whole bunch of different patterns, you'll notice that typically scrubs were a kind of a minty green or even a blue. And that was the typical color you might see when you were in a hospital with people surrounding you in the doctor scenario, if you will. And there's not an accident to that. A lot of people don't realize that those colors came from the feeling of balance. Green is the color of balance outside. It also grounds people. It's a very sort of pacifying color, but depending on the shade that you choose, it doesn't pull energy, so it doesn't depress or overly calm so that one becomes lethargic. And it doesn't stimulate. It can often create just a sustainable amount of energy or one that allows you to feel balanced. And that has a lot to do with the intentional aspect of it being something that comes from the outdoors, that is nature and very grounding. And that's why plants are also extremely important within our everyday environment. Also in hospitals, typically you have very, one or the other, you have very austere, again, basic surroundings where you don't really see much color, or you go to the other extreme where there's a lot of color, especially in areas that have children. And again, we're thinking about primary colors and things of that nature that seem childlike, but we're not taking into consideration how it has a subliminal effect on those around us just in general. So I wanted people to understand that the colors of browns, neutral colors, and greens and blues, those types of tones typically are used in terms of soothing, pacifying atmospheres, mainly because they are balancing, grounding colors as they are natural and are nature, organic, lifestyle colors, cooler colors, things that allow us to feel a little more tranquil in general. But that is where it comes from. So I hope that makes sense. Does that help a little bit in terms of where they...
It makes sense to me, especially because when I was in college, I worked at a state hospital, Fairview State Hospital in Orange County, and yes, they had this kind of a green, a pale green on all the walls and everywhere because they felt that it was calming. There was
yeah.
a reason why they thought that.
Absolutely, and so it was no accident. Going over to the next slide, and we're going to take our time because clearly this is a little bit... stubborn. That's not quite where I want to be yet.
It seems like it just takes a little bit of time for it to load because it's pictures, that's why. So
yeah, and I apologize to everybody for the confusion, so just go with the flow.
Exactly.
It's just like life. Stuff happens. What are you going to do? So you know what? I'll just go with the flow myself. So here is a list of questions, and these questions are things that I ask in my live seminars. When we're in workshops and seminars, I like things to be really experiential. So the next thing that's going to happen is I'm going to show you some specific colors, and that's when I'm going to have Chantel sort of give us her impressions of the colors based on the questions that I ask. And also I'd love the audience to type in their responses and their questions as well. But when you look at colors, the first question I ask is, what is the first word you think of? And then what is the first feeling or emotion, you know, that you experience when looking at the color? And obviously those are different. When I ask for the first word, I'm not looking for an emotion. I'm really looking for the first object or noun that might come into your thought process. And then we get into the feeling or emotion. And you'll be really surprised. People are always shocked at the differences, the extreme differences between their answers. And then we go on to ask if the color energizes or depletes you. Are you able to focus easily looking at the color? Do you begin to feel agitated and need to look away from the color? Does it trigger a specific memory? Do you gravitate towards specific colors in your wardrobe? And then often, if so, I'll ask people why, because very frequently they'll say they don't know. But when we spend some time there, people always know why they're gravitating to a color in their wardrobe that might make them feel better. Do you notice if you feel better in a particular or a specific room in your home than any other, besides wanting, of course, to sit in that favorite comfy chair? Do you notice if the colors you're drawn to are solids or more patterns? And do you tend to prefer muted neutrals over bright primary colors? And as we have people go through and answer all these questions, it becomes a real discovery about the things people are learning about their own environment, about why they prefer certain environments, and how it's affecting them, which is usually very subliminal or subconscious. So now we're going to go into colors. So here is our first slide, which is clearly red. So Chantal, I'm going to ask you to respond to at least the first two questions, the first word and the first emotion. And then if you can expand on asking our listeners to do the same.
Yeah, I did want to say that there's a couple listeners who are asking questions, and we will be answering your specific questions later, so don't go away, but think of the exercise that she's having you go through. So, Red, what is the first question?
What is the first word? And everyone, I would suggest, you know, take a pen and paper and write this down for yourself. There's no right or wrong. You know, don't worry about what your spouse or your friend or your partner is thinking. Just write it down for yourself. And
send in some answers, too, and I'm going to read them.
Yeah, please. So what's the first word, and then what's the first emotion you think of when you see this color, Chantal?
Fire and hot.
Okay. Fire and hot. Great. Now, what are some of the responses that some other people have had or are typing in?
Let's see. I have to switch over to another...
And as an emotion, Chantal, hot is a reaction. What is an emotion you feel?
Yeah, you know, you're right. What is an emotion that I could
And usually I tell people to look at it very quickly and then, you know, turn away, because if you perseverate over it, if you sit and sort of look at it for a while, it'll start to shift.
So for an emotion, I kind of think of... I don't want to say anger, and I don't really want to say frustration, but it's more on those that kind of energy level.
Aggression or
yeah. Yeah, that's a good way. Or assertive, maybe.
Assertive.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to do the same thing for three more colors. So I want people to immediately just write it down.
Okay.
And the same for you, Chantal. Don't say it. Just take note of what the first word and the first emotion is.
We'll go through all the colors.
Yeah.
Three more colors or two more colors.
So we're going to just sit for a second or two on this color. First word and first emotion. And then we're going to go to the next color. Oops, sorry. And then lastly, this is going to be the last color. So I'm hoping people are taking note. Like I said, first word for each color and then first emotion. It was red, blue, green, and now yellow. So now we can actually kind of chat for a second. Do you have that information, Chantal?
Wait, I'm still writing my words
down. Okay, good. You can only do it for a second, though. Fast, fast. First reaction.
Okay. So you want me to read you mine, and then I'll go see if people have written theirs in. It'll give the people a chance to write it in.
Yeah.
Okay, so I had down for blue.
Uh-huh.
Warm as the word, and energetic as the emotion I felt.
Okay.
For the green, I had the first word that came in mind was grass.
Uh-huh.
Really not very creative. Vibrance was the emotion I felt, like energy vibrance.
So, okay.
Which was different than the blue. The blue was energetic, but it was more like a calming energy.
Well, those are obviously very different because you're talking about calm and then you're talking about energy, which are, again...
Yeah, but it didn't feel like depressing calm. Like when I look at beige,
uh-huh.
It'd be calm, but to me that's depressing calm.
Right.
Maybe I'm not making sense.
No, I understand what you're saying.
Okay. And then for the yellow, I had bright was the first thing that came in mind, and then happy was the emotion I felt looking at that. So let me see if people have written in. I still have questions. Okay, somebody said, wow, good, we're getting some answers here. Okay, I'm going to have to go down here. Gosh. Okay. Too bright, shut it off. Passion, bright, anxious, bright, and wow, fire,
wait,
engine.
Say that again?
These are all the reds now.
Okay, go ahead.
Too bright, shut it off. Passion, bright, anxious, bright, and wow, fire, engine, and love. The first word, bright, first feeling, passion. Red for me is energy and a feeling of moving fast. Burn, bright, anger, irritation, apple, and strength, bright, mad. Okay, here comes the next color, which was, what was the next color?
Blue.
Okay.
And you know what? I'm just going to stop you for a second.
Okay.
I think that's a great example. You have someone who sent in, if I'm correct, they said love and passion. Someone else said, was it anger and irritation?
Yes.
Okay, perfect example. So if the person who said anger and irritation happen to have that color somewhere in their home, whether it be their bedroom or perhaps their office, and in their bedroom they were having arguments, or in their office they were feeling agitated or fidgety or even got a headache, and they didn't know why, the color would have a lot to do with it. Yet on the other hand, you have a person who's reminded of love and passion, which is, again, very different. That same person with that red in their bedroom might find that they have a very passionate, reaction when they're in their bedroom, and that there's a lot of intimacy that happens rather than arguments.
Right. That's really interesting. It shows how it's so important that, let's say, if you are a kind of person who has a designer help you with your house,
mm-hmm.
that you're really using your opinions about what you are feeling and not what the designer thinks should be that color in your room.
Well, it can't always be about trend or aesthetic, and that's why what I want people to understand is if you're reacting differently to colors, imagine what your child on the spectrum is reacting to and how they can't even, they may not be able to express it in the right words to you.
Right.
So if the color affects you, it's going to affect them to the 10th power. And it's going to affect them in ways you may not be aware of, especially on a grand scale. So now let's go to blue.
Okay, cool, happy. Next one is pretty calm, natural and calm. Someone here put in a bunch at a time. Red was pretty happy, I think, because when I wear it, most people say I look good in it, and therefore I feel happy. Red, fire, anger. Blue, water, calm. Bright and eager. Someone else has for blue, sky, energy. Somebody has red energy and fast. Okay, blue, soft and calm. Blue, sky and calm. Blue, cool feeling, peace. That's it for the blues.
Okay, so that's great. And you have some people saying soft and calm, and some people saying, happy, energy, eager. Now, again, while they're all lovely, they're very different, and we're showing you the primary types of colors, of these are primary colors, so we're showing you the typical primary colors people think of. But if everyone thinks of blue and they close their eyes, they're all going to get a different version, depth, brightness, et cetera, contrast of that blue.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing that people have to realize, the same with red, yellow, or any color. When you talk about a color, especially like one of the biggest things is when you're talking about hair color and somebody says, I want a blonde. I want to be blonde. In fact, I remember my mom had this major issue. She had someone way back when I was little who did her hair just phenomenally well. And there was a particular blonde that she had, and it was gorgeous. And ever since she had moved and left that particular beautician, she described the blonde the way it looked to her, but she was never able to get that same color. So if you say, I want my hair to be sandy blonde to somebody, that person's going to get a very particular look or idea of what sandy blonde is. But everybody's idea is different. If you say red, someone's going to think fire engine red, and someone else is going to think like a brick red. Well, the fire engine is an orange red. The brick red is a blue red.
Right.
So it's very difficult when you're talking about color in a general way. Blue, someone's going to think of that light, lovely, calming, soft sky blue, and someone's going to think of a bright, energetic, as they said here, happy, energizing, bright blue. And that's the main issue I want people to get. Color is very subjective, even though we all know what yellow basically looks like. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, and so this is why when we do these in more depth in our workshops and seminars, the awareness and the experience becomes major, because suddenly people really have their own personal experiential idea of how different these basic things are. The other thing is, when lighting hits color, it affects the color dramatically. And when you use a paint and you have a sheen, whether it be an eggshell or a satin finish or something that's shiny, again, all of these elements coming together change the color and the way the color reacts in the space.
Okay, so you want to hear green now?
Yes.
Grass, happy. Trees, spice.
Trees what? Sorry?
Spice. S-P-I-C-E.
Oh,
you know, like
spice.
Spice.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
I haven't heard that before. I love that.
Green, calm. Let's see. Green, grass, soothing. Meadow, calm. Green, nature, calm. Trees, refreshed. Trees, soothes. Water, running like a brook. Oh, no, that's... must be blue. Sorry. Green, grass. Happy.
That's good.
Green,
okay.
Plants, and balance.
Balance. Okay. So, again, we have a lot of different words.
Energetic.
And energetic. The
yeah.
Outdoors comes up a lot, which is, as I said, it's all about balance, which is why green was so integral in terms of hospitals and utilizing scrubs always in green from the very start, greens or blues. But all of these words have to do with, again, similar types of reactions, but still different to each person. One person is saying they feel soothed. Another person is feeling saying they feel refreshed. Well, while they can be similar in the family of feeling good and well-being, there's still a nuance of difference between feeling refreshed and feeling soothed. And again, it has a lot to do with not just saying it's green, but what type of green. That green is often like considered like a Kelly green or a brighter green, a more primary green. But if you go into the green family, these particular people's reactions would shift as we look at darker greens, lighter greens, and that's the other thing, how we describe green. Bright isn't always the same to everyone. Somebody else may say it's deep. Somebody else will call it bright. So, again, it's all of these nuances make such a difference in the degree of emotion and reaction that we feel. Let's go to yellow, because I usually get a very different reaction like we did with
right.
The red, too.
I'm seeing that here. Sun, overwhelmed. Sun, happy. Yellow, yuck, feeling wake up. Somebody doesn't like to wake up.
Right.
Yellow, bright, energetic. Bright, alert. Sun, happy. Sunflowers, happy, energetic. Bright, energetic. Sun, hot.
Okay, so you could even stop right there because we have yuck and we have happy.
And overwhelmed.
And overwhelmed. So God forbid, the person that says yuck has that as a main color in their home in any room rather than an accent, that person is not going to be happy with the way they feel or respond or function in that space, especially if it's their office.
Right.
And that's why, you know, and yet the person who says happy might love the idea of that color on a large, grand scale in a particular space. But do they want it in their bedroom, or would they want it in a room where they need more activity? And then even if they have it in a room with more activity, is it their office, or is it a playroom? Because you might like yellow, but that particular yellow may not be great on a grand scale for your ability to function as you need it to in your office. So the other thing I want to bring across is that very often people are looking at purely aesthetic and they say, oh, you know, with their interior designer, I love this look in this magazine, or I love this particular design. And they put it in a room not thinking about, well, is it going to support what I need to accomplish in that room? And so maybe it's now in that room and they're not doing what they need to at the rate that they normally could, or rising to their full potential, and they're assuming it's a million other things that happen that day, when really it's as simple as it's not the right color.
Right.
And people never look at color and think that could be affecting their ability.
Well, what about white? What does white do to people? You know how some people don't paint their walls. I mean, they just leave it white.
Well, the irony is that men and women have very different, on the whole, I'm talking about majority, very different abilities to see to discern the difference between colors, which is why men go nuts when there's, you know, 10 shades of white in front of them, and they don't get what the difference is. They're like, it's all white, and it makes them crazy when women ask them that. The fact is, men don't have the same types of rods and cones in their eyes that women do, typically. So they're often colorblind, whereas women are not. Now, there are men that are not, and they have great discernment of color, artists, et cetera, and so forth, but we're talking, again, on the whole. And so white, it's really important, again, that there are different shades of white, and it's important that you pick the right one if you want a purely white home or white kitchen or whatever it is. You want to be careful about how bright it is. And what type of sheen? And again, are you using sunlight? Is there a lot of sunlight coming in? Or are you using light bulbs? Are they fluorescent, which I hope they never are? Are they white? Are they soft? Are they yellow? Are they white lights? All of that makes a difference in the type of white that you can use in the home. So just because you leave something white doesn't mean that it's nondescript or it's not going to have an effect on you. It's very important what kind of white you use.
Good. I got that.
Yeah. So now that we've gone through color, if there's a question that you have, I'm happy to answer, or we can move on.
Okay. There's a couple questions here, and let me get to them, please. Okay. This is from Joyce Anthony in Erie, Pennsylvania.
Hi, Joyce. Thanks for being part of our seminar today.
Is the balancing property of green why so many autistic or Asperger kids choose green as their favorite color?
Actually, yes, it's a great question. I've worked with a lot of kids, and very often when I give them their choice, they pick blues and greens on their own accord. They don't even gravitate to some of the brighter colors. And that is very much why they tend to gravitate towards the balancing blues and greens, all different hues, all different contrasts. And sometimes they even choose some of the brighter colors, and parents are thinking, you know, I just want to make my kid happy. So they put the color everywhere. But really, if it's a very bright color that they gravitate towards, you want to keep it in the accent you know, on the accent level. You don't want to have it on a grand scale. You'd want to have a version of a softer green, perhaps on a larger scale or as an accent wall. But again, it depends on your particular child. While most kids on the spectrum tend to need more soothing, tranquil colors, there are some that need, stimulation. And so in that scenario, obviously, shifting in terms of how you use a brighter color would be necessary. But that is why they tend to gravitate to those colors. That was a great question. Thank you, Joyce.
And it could change over time, couldn't it? Like,
yes.
My son used to choose blues and greens, like, for comforter covers.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he's chosen orange more often than not.
Well, again, just like all of us, as we get older, we all shift and change. We all tend to evolve in terms of what we like and what we don't like, and sometimes we're not sure why. But it also has to do with our maturity process. And very often, if there is a brighter color, as I said, that they choose, that's a part that might stimulate an area that's one of their strengths. It may help him with his creativity or whatever it is that he's really good at. And so, again, it's great to always validate and have those particular colors in their surroundings, but not necessarily on a grand scale. And I think that's always the case when it comes to excessively bright colors. But it's important to validate whatever it is they feel supports them and that they gravitate towards in a positive way.
So Judy from Clifton Springs, New York asks, working in an autism-based classroom that is already established, where would be the best place to start to begin the change into a color focus for a classroom?
Well, I know classrooms are limiting. So as a former teacher, I definitely understand, Judy, where you're coming from. And I know that you have a lot of constraints put upon you. So I would say one of the first things to do is to look at the things that are up on all of your walls and really decide what has to be there and what doesn't. And if you're able to take things that are very, you know, colorful where you're using a whole bunch of different colors, maybe you can take one particular color and use the variations of that color. So let's say you have a rainbow of color somewhere in your room. Perhaps you can just use one color and use a whole bunch of different shades of that color instead. So maybe you have a whole bunch of different blues or a whole bunch of different reds rather than red, green, you know, pink, purple, yellow, et cetera, and so forth. Also, try to separate the amount of information you have into almost like stations. So you go here for one particular thing, you go to another area for another particular thing, and don't try to mix and match so many things because it just becomes too overwhelming. Maybe also have some more, areas where you can put things away, stations where you can contain things. So even if you have to have a few more areas of shelving or movable containers, make them opaque so that you can't see through them. Have less things that you can see through, more things that are closed and covered and labeled. So again, people know they only go, your students know they only go there when it's time to work on those particular things. Otherwise, we don't open them or they stay closed and everything doesn't have to be out. When it comes to books, perhaps you have a few out that you're going to use and then put some away and, you know, change them out. But don't have everything out. Sometimes it's worth the few extra minutes to take things out as needed rather than have them all out all the time. And I'm sure as a teacher it would be helpful for you, for your visual overstimulation, to have less to sort of focus on and look at when you're trying to teach. One more thing, if I may, because I know I'm giving a lot of information.
Hey, well, someone's asking, can we please remove the yellow slide?
Oh, I think goodness, it's... yes. See? Thank you. I'm going to go back.
So finish your thought, and then I have some more questions for you from people.
Great. I'm going to go back to the logo. And see, I'm so glad that viewer said that. I wasn't even paying attention. But, yeah, it's just too much. It's overstimulating and overwhelming. So my apologies. I am not a yellow fan, and I wasn't looking at the slide. What I was going to say is with fluorescent lighting, which is often in classrooms, just turn it off. turn it off. If you can't use the outside lighting, you know, if you don't have a window, my suggestion is go to Target, get one or two freestanding lamps, and put in soft white bulbs, natural bulbs, and use the soft lighting. You're saving on the energy bill, and you're also really alleviating a lot of unnecessary stimulation and stress, frankly, on you and your students. Fluorescent lighting is the worst lighting anyone could possibly use.
Yes, hear, hear.
Yeah.
Okay, so Lisa G. from Salem, Virginia, since color preferences vary from person to person, what colors do you recommend in the classroom, i.e. for the paint or the borders, et cetera?
I always recommend neutral colors in a classroom. Neutral meaning they don't have to be blues and greens per se, but if you combine a blue or a green with a neutral like a cafe au lait, something in the brown peach area, it doesn't have to be brown, but I would say in the taupe, in the khaki, things of that nature that are, you know, light coffee, as I said, cafe au lait, with the contrast of a light green or a light blue, it gives some coziness and some warmth in the neutral, but the tranquil color of the cooler blues and greens also give a little bit of sustainable energy. So you don't want to use too light or too pastel of a blue or green because it can make, you know, it can pull some energy and make them too calm, but something with a slight energetic feel to it will allow for some sustainable energy, and you want that in a classroom where people are able to focus and concentrate and they're able to sustain the energy throughout their classes, but they also have some warmth. So it's not so cold and overly stimulating with the brighter colors. I would keep the brighter primary colors for use just in terms of the things that you're using, your aids, your education aids, rewards, things of that nature where it has a pop and it feels special and unique, but it's not something that surrounds them 24/7.
So Jean from San Luis Obispo says, wish I'd realized this before painting my son's bed a beautiful dark brick red color. He was 3 or 4 at the time and in tears because it was too bright. It had been an ugly bright blue in my eyes before that. Poor kiddo, and with an OT mom, too.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, here's the other thing is people often look at those little chits of color in the paint store and they think, wow, that's going to be great, but they're not realizing that once you do a few coats, it's darker or deeper or brighter. And also, again, on that grand scale, it doesn't always translate. So if you do use a color like that, you want to keep it to a small area or even one wall and then contrast it with a warmer, cozier color. Like if you use a brick blue-red, sometimes it's really great to have it with a brown because it's very cozy and it feels very warm. The same with if you have a tranquil, cooler color like a blue and you have it with a brown. It pulls in the energy so it's not overstimulating and again, adds some coziness and some contrast and some balance from outside. But when you're dealing with kids' rooms, I'd be careful with using bright, bright colors in any other way other than an accent. I'm also very careful with the types of patterns or designs you put in kids' rooms, whether it be animals or superheroes or race cars, things of that nature, because, again, when the lights are out and there are shadows and you don't know what your kid responds to yet, those fun things that seem very kid-friendly can become very ominous and have a very different feel at night when you're dealing with shadows and you're dealing with subliminal thought processes and you don't know what the children are reacting to or what frightens them. The thing, you know, they might love animals by day, but not so much at night.
So someone asks, this is Grace from Lomita. My ASD son is obsessed with pink, and his therapist said quite a few ASD boys like that, too. Any idea why?
Well, again, I talk about this in my book that gender has no bearing anymore, you know, pink being for girls and blue being for boys. So I'm really glad that that was brought up. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that even way back years and years ago, they used to use pink in jail cells and prisons because it was one of the only colors that truly pacified the most violent offenders that were, of course, men. And that this certainly doesn't go to saying that your child is aggressive in a violent way. It just means that guys often are drawn to the more tranquil colors of red, which happen to be, you know, they happen to be attached to the reds, you know, so it does, it's not surprising that as we tone down a red and we add white, we get to pinks. So pinks are have to do a lot more with a more subtle feeling of warmth. It has a lot to do with maternal feelings. It has a lot to do with simply pacifying them from the aggressive color that men are very much drawn to, because it has to do with power. It has to do with strength. And we tone that down to the lighter shades, and that becomes pink, which, again, has to do with calming, maternal, warm, loving, pacifying feelings. And that tends to have a really subliminal feeling on reaction on men and on boys. So it's not at all anything negative. I think it's wonderful that they're reacting that way. And, again, using them in tones along with browns is a great way to support them and still have it feel grounded and have it feel masculine and basically accomplish what you need to accomplish. So don't at all be uncomfortable with the fact that they're drawn to some of the lighter shades of pink.
You know, it's interesting because when Jeremy was 16, he's 22 now, but when he was 16 and he had to give his first input for his individual transitional plan, you know, at the high school,
mm-hmm.
or that was high school at the time. And so at that time he was typing, you know, spelling words out, but this was the first time that he actually wrote out like a whole paragraph in preparation for what information he was going to give at the meeting.
Right.
And I'm just going to read a few lines of it, but he was talking about his future because that's what transition plans are about. And he wrote, "I am imagining a future of people who work. A future of orange and mauve. People who are not my family, who like to spend time with me, happy to be my friends." So there's more in there, but that was the only color he mentioned. But I remember sitting in that IEP meeting saying, gee, I wonder what that orange and mauve is about. And the psychologist at the meeting said, you know, it's really interesting because I've recently read a study that was done in California state prisons about color preferences and what it made people feel like. And the men in the prisons preferred the orange and the lavender colors. They said it was the most, some of it was calming for them, or just that they wanted to see those colors more in the prisons. And they ended up using a lot of those colors because it made the prisoners feel better.
Yeah, it's not an accident. The orange allows them to feel positive. There's an energy to it, but depending again on the type of orange, it doesn't have to be stimulating. It can just be sustainable energy, like almost like a tangerine. And then when you look at the mauve is like, and the fact that your son, that Jeremy, used such a specific color.
Yeah.
He didn't say purple. He
nope.
didn't say pink. He said mauve. And mauve is like a very soft, plummy purple, almost like a dusty rose, but deeper. I mean, we can go into the nuances of that, but again, it's not an accident. That has to do, again, with the warmth of emotion. It has to do with loving feelings. It has to do with subtlety. It has to do with the tranquil feelings that often come from those colors. And lavender is a perfect example of that. So I think it's great. And when you look at my new logo, we
yep.
use those colors because of the reactions we've got from most of our community and most of our clients, where a lot of the blues and a lot of the lighter lavenders, purples, plums, really had a certain type of effect, very positive, with a lot of our community. And I think that it's very telling, and people should really start focusing more on how their environment is affecting them, and not just those on the spectrum. I'm talking about in your home, in your rooms, in your offices, how you're able to be productive. We try to work with corporations and women's home offices specifically to, you know, improve on concentration and bottom-line productivity, because surroundings, especially in a cubicle, are integral to people's ability to really work in a positive way and keep their thought process where they need to. not just having pictures around them. And
yeah, I need you to come to my house, because when Jeremy moves into his own place, hopefully with supports, he's going to need some color, and I need to know what color is going to make me write more efficiently.
It really is no joke. And yet at the same time, it's exciting because it's not so complicated to really make a huge difference for yourself, your own productivity, your family, and your child. It doesn't have to always be so complicated. And fortunately, we work internationally, so I can help anybody.
I've got some more comments and questions. Benjamin in Alabama wants to know, if autistic children, adults are affected by colors, why do nurses or even staff members in office buildings that treat autistics wear scrubs that are different colors?
Because now, to be honest with you, it's really become an expression, a way to self-express, since people have to wear their own, you know, they have to wear scrubs every day. Now it's become a fashion statement. And so people can wear that, you know, scrubs in any color, just like with anything else, to express themselves and how they feel. What's ironic is that in hospitals and in a lot of the places where they're catering to our kids, they're not focusing on how it's affecting kids. They're assuming, like oftentimes in a child's ward, I have seen a lot of the nurses wearing bright, bright color scrubs because it's for kids. Kid friendly, it's bright, it's fun. But very often, again, we're not realizing that kids all respond differently. So having something that's, you know, that's more middle of the road, which would be not always a bright color, would probably be smarter on the whole, but that's not how people are looking at it, and this is my point. People are not focusing on the importance of environment, color, sensory design, not the way they should be at this juncture when we're talking about one out of 91 kids being diagnosed on the spectrum. And again, not just kids on the spectrum, but for all of us. We're still looking at it as a design element, as a luxury, as a aesthetic thing with no real effect.
Right.
You know, people are not really taking this into consideration and to heart quite the way they should be yet. We're getting there, but we're not there yet.
Okay, so Barbara from Moscow Mills, I think MO means Missouri. I'm sorry if I'm butchering people's names, by the way, especially with the name I have. But Barbara was a pretty easy name, but I don't know how I did with the rest of the location. So this person, Barbara, wants to paint her 8-year-old with autism's bedroom. He is nonverbal and doesn't appear to gravitate to any one color. So what do you recommend? What do you do when you don't know someone's preference?
The first thing I tell parents that they, and parents often struggle with me about this, but they always thank me afterwards. I don't know how old Barbara's child is, did you say?
8-year-old.
8 years old, okay. So the first thing I would do, Barbara, is I would journal for 1 week. I and perhaps your partner or your husband should take the time, and if you're a single parent, that's fine too, take the time to journal every single day where your child is going when he you know, feels certain things. Where does he go throughout the day? Is there any sort of routine? Journal all day about what you're noticing. No matter how much you already think you know, do it anyway. Because I promise you by the end of that 7 days, you will say, oh, my gosh, I didn't even realize this. I didn't notice this. I didn't, et cetera, and so forth. And that will start to educate you and navigate in terms of the answer you're looking for. Once you have that information, you could come back to me and give me that information, and then I could say to you, this is what I would do based on what you notice. Because there are things that he is doing to handle his internal emotions. You're just not noticing them. And that's all parents. It's very typical. So don't at all feel badly or uncomfortable. It's very typical, and I have all parents do this. And that's how we get to the point of figuring out where we should start. When I'm able, I spend time with the kids, so, you know, for a day or two, so I can notice these things. But where I can't, this is what I tell parents to do. And it is one of the requirements I have of parents before I work with them. You're welcome to email me after you do that at lauren@brushoflove.com. So don't at all feel like you won't have the answers you need.
Okay, great. Kathy from Mount Juliet asks, if you have any pictures available showing a classroom decorated in neutral tones with blues, greens, or pinks.
I don't on this PowerPoint, but certainly I can discuss that in more specifics. And, you know, I can, if she wants to email me, we can go through that more specifically. But I do want to move into some other pictures I have of some of the rooms that I've done. This is one room that I did for HGTV's Kids Space. And this can show you a little bit about some of the things we've discussed. Is that all right?
Yes, go right ahead.
Okay. So where I was, which is right here, this slide is a slide from KidSpace that we did a few years ago, and this is for two boys that were in one bedroom, one being an Asperger's little boy of 5 and the other being a brother of 7 who was neurotypical but very, very hyper. So, you know, almost like an ADD child. And they're sharing the same room. And so before, you see, the room was crazy. You had like a mango yellow color. You had a crazy traffic-y carpet with trucks and whatnot over here. We had what you can't see. There were tie-dye pictures up on the wall. And then you had different types of sheets with all sorts of patterns. It was nuts in that particular room. So how we changed it was the following. We came in, and I actually had to hand mix a color of blue because I couldn't find the blue that I wanted. I wanted kind of a sustainable, again, energy, a cornflower blue with something that was a little brighter, and that's what I mixed. And then, you know, we got a bunk bed rather than two separate beds, and we really pared down on all of the shelving, and what you can't see is that there are some closed shelves, again, only a few open shelves with containers that you could see through. The main thing that made a huge difference is what I want to discuss, and that's this bridge here. The little boy who had Asperger's really focused and perseverated on bridges. That was his obsession. And he loved shapes. So what we did is I decided to paint a bridge all the way around the entire room. And then in areas of the bridge, I painted different color shapes, and they were all different colors. Some were bright and some were neutral. And then there was an outline of little yellow lights over the bridge. But what we did is we also had his father, who happened to work in construction, cut out the same template of the bridge in wood. And we didn't paint the wood. We simply did a polyurethane of sheen over the wood so that it was smooth and shiny. So during the day, we had the bridge with colors and lights and shapes that the little boy Adrian could look at and identify with. But then at night, when it was time to self-soothe and decompress for bed, we would then cover the bridge with the wood bridge. And we went one step further, and we had the wood bridge cut into puzzle pieces so that when we put the bridge up on the wall, they fit together in pieces. So now the bridge was calming. There was no color, no shapes, but the consistency of the bridge was still there throughout the day and the night. On top of that, there was a tangible sense that Adrian and his brother John, John Russ is his name, could lift the bridge off. They could touch it, feel it, hold it in their hand, and play with it together, which brought them together, and they could put the bridge on the floor. So there were three uses to this bridge. It allowed Adrian to stay with the bridge all day and night. It allowed him to still be calm in the evening and decompress, and it gave them the tangible ability to handle a bridge together, three-dimensionally, in the room and out of the room. And that is the major element that made it much easier for both boys to, excuse me, live in the room together happily. John Rush loved insects and bright colors, and so if you notice, we just have pops of that validate John Russ's need, including a little picture of a ladybug.
Very cool.
So
I hope
that helps people who have two children sharing a room. In my book, we talk about how to do that as well. So we're going to move on real quick. This is another room. I went and worked with the military. I was very fortunate to be invited by the Marines. and work in Japan on one of the military bases in Okinawa for one of the families that had an autistic little boy. And the rooms and the housing that they had for the military, as you can imagine, are very small and don't really allow for much, especially when you travel a lot. So this is what it looked like before. The boy's bedroom ended up being a playroom and several other things. And it was very stark and had a lot of clutter that was hard to see. This is what it looked like when we were done. In 2 quick days, we had the Marines just rip everything out and we started from scratch. And while it looks like, well, they just painted it blue, there are very specific things that we did. And if you go to our website, you can actually see the video highlights of everything that we did.
Wow, that looks really cool. Because we're just seeing the slide now. It's so calming.
Yeah, we changed everything, and we did it in a way that it could be replicated because we know that people are in the military are constantly traveling. So keeping things consistent for a child, especially one on the spectrum, is, again, paramount for that child's ability to move and transition more easily. So we got a bunk bed that is opened so the child doesn't feel too constrained and encapsulated, but at the same time, the bunk bed also serves as a almost like a hug. It makes them feel really embraced and supported. We keep it open so that he can see and he can connect, but the covering of the bunk bed also allows him to feel secure and safe. Now, the brilliant thing is that it can be taken down easily for transport, and also it can be separated into 2 young men beds that as this little boy gets older, he can still use this bed as an adult big boy bed. And since the mom was pregnant, it was going to be great that they could use it for more than a decade as their kids grew. They would have 2 separate beds. Number 2, we made sure that we had this was a very favorite chair, and since it was a very subtle yellow, we kept this one piece of bright color that was still subtle in the room in order to create a little pop of energy and a little comfort because it is a chair that the little boy loved because the material was so soft. We added this blue that was very calming, and the thing to know about this little boy is that he hated covers. He hated going to sleep. And they had to go through an hour and a half of a whole
rigmarole.
Yeah, a whole rigmarole. Thank you. Every night with a box of toys in order for him to go to sleep. Okay. We also got this particular rug, offering a little bit of pattern again to have a little bit of stimulation, but nothing too crazy. With a little pop of that green. So again, you have some sort of visual difference to create interest, but nothing that's going to pull too much from the child's ability to self-soothe and nothing that will overstimulate. The curtains were transparent so that you have the Venetian blind that the military offers, but underneath you had one sheath that would tone down the sun, and you also had a transparent netting that could totally block out the heat and the sun, but also allow a little bit to come through so that it doesn't seem too shut out from the world or too cold. And that was really
I have a
important
question. Someone sent in a question specific about this picture. There are other questions as well, but
okay.
Judy from Clifton Springs says, I look at the picture and I feel calm. That shade of blue is relaxing. Do you find that using the blinds is an issue for visual stimming, and shouldn't that be avoided in the classroom?
Well, in a classroom, you know, you can't usually do much because very often the schools won't allow you to. So in the classroom, I just deal with the blinds, but I control them in terms of, like, meaning I don't let the kids just do whatever they want. I keep it closed when there's a lot going on outside.
I guess she means, like, if you look at this picture, is it a visual stimming thing in this bedroom also for this child? Is that a problem? Have you noticed?
No, because the curtain, what's there right there is a little stuffed animal. All you have to do is take it off and the curtain comes down, so we rarely ever see the Venetian blinds. That was part
okay.
of why I put that particular curtain up.
Right.
We also put it up higher and made the curtain longer to create a longer look there rather than keeping it short and cutting off the room. We make the curtain much higher and much longer. And that creates a longer, believe it or not, more soothing look because there's no cutoff. The light is also, instead of being a light that you turn on and off, there's a foot control that allows you to control how much light there. So a controlled light rather than a light that turns on and off.
Right. We'll think of the word. It's okay.
But you guys know what I mean.
Yeah, we have to take our Omega Fest today.
I clearly do. I clearly do. This is another picture of the bed, just from a different angle, okay? And this is another one as well. This plant here is called a cornstalk trachanus. It's very easily found in all stores. It's an indoor plant. It's not expensive. What's great about it is that it grows into a huge plant. It doesn't need a lot of attention, but it acts as a natural air filter. So what's wonderful is that a lot of the chemicals that are in the air actually feed this plant. So just keeping this plant here cleans the oxygen.
Very nice.
And I talk about that in the book as well. I also talk about the importance of what you have on the wall, what pictures, at what eye level, and where. And it's very important often that you clean up the walls and you don't have a lot up on the walls. Some of the things that your kids like, it's better to have it in a smaller, more contained picture frame in one or two areas on some of the furniture, and that you actually only have one or two or three pictures up on the wall at eye level of the family. And the reason that's so important is that your child feel connected and they have an immediate feeling of the family and the security they have in the room so that they don't feel that they always have to run out of the room into a parent's room or a sibling's room, that they feel connected even in their own space.
That's a great idea.
It's more important than you think, having one of you with your one with you and your child, one with your child with their siblings, and one of your child, so that when the lights are out or when the lights are dim, or just when they're alone in their space and you're in theirs, or rather you're in your space, they feel connected remaining in their own space, and they feel protected.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, it's very subliminal but very important.
Great idea.
Thank you. So then we move on to the next, and this is just talking about what type...
You know what? I'm sorry. A couple of people...
Go right ahead.
About the name of the plant.
Mm-hmm. It's called a corn stalk.
Corn stalk, like corn that you eat, and stalk, like...
Correct. Corn stalk, Dracanus, which is a D as in dog, R-A-C-A-N-E-A. It's actually corn stalk Dracana. Dracana is a large family of plants. Corn stalk is one of the most typical, and you'll know because the leaves are very large and there's a large yellow line going right down the center. You've seen them everywhere, you just didn't know what they were called.
Yeah.
And again, I talk about the plants in my book as well.
And then somebody else asked, is there a website where they can see the images that you're describing that are on your PowerPoint?
Yes, you can actually go to brushoflove.com. My PowerPoint is not there, but there's a webinar about color that is a free download. You can order my book from my website. It'll actually say products or book. And on the website, I don't really go into specifics about the plants and things of that nature outside of the book or some of the conferences and seminars that I do. But we're going to be having a free teleseminar for Q&A about this kind of thing and for more information. So if you look at my website in the upcoming week or two, there'll be information about the teleseminar that you can join, and we'll talk more about some of the products I'll be offering in the near future.
Okay. I think they were just concerned because they were having trouble with the slides, and they wanted to know if they could go on your website. And I know I've seen some of those pictures that you showed in your PowerPoints on your website.
Yes. If you want, I can – well, I don't think I show that much, but I can go back to one of the slides that has the plant in the room. Would that be helpful?
Well, why don't we just continue, and I'll see if people – if the
person – Yeah, just see if there's any questions
yes.
about that. I was just – this the slide I'm on now is about paint, because I know there's so many paints, and now it's very trendy. The one that I use the most is the Benjamin Moore Natura, which is completely VOC-free, and VOC is a volatile organic compound. Those are found in all regular paint, and it's the chemicals that cause a lot of the odor and also, you know, make a lot of the paint bind, et cetera, and so forth, but they're not necessary. And so if you can ever find a zero VOC or even a low VOC paint, that's what you want to use. I tend to use the Natura more because it lasts a long time. It dries more quickly than most average paints. They come in every color now that you can imagine, and they have a citrus base.
Which so paint is that?
This is the Benjamin Moore Natura, Natura. It's natural without the L. And if you're looking at the slide, it's the top right picture.
Right.
And now let me also say it's more expensive by the gallon than your average paint. It's about $42 or $45. But it is very well worth it. As you will see when you use it, it dries much more quickly. And there's a citrus base, so you don't have to leave. It's not an awful odor or anything like that. It's a whole different experience. Also, the Benjamin Moore AuraGuard, which is low VOC, is the bottom right picture, and that's another great one to use. There are a lot of different ones. There's another one called YOLO, Y-O-L-O, which is a wonderful paint to use. And then I also show here, which are more limited in colors, Fresh Air Choice, which I believe you can now get at Home Depot. And Sherman Williams has their brand called Harmony. There's a lot of paints coming out that are no VOC now. What you need to do is just really look, because a lot of the paints say no VOC, but they're not. They just have the lowest amount to get away with saying it. So you just want to really look at some of the ingredients and whatnot on the back, and it should be zero VOC. The low ones, you're still safe using. Don't feel badly if you can't get the no VOC. Just make sure that you're paying a little more attention and you're looking at what the degrees are on the back.
Okay, I'm just giving you a time warning here that we have about 15 minutes left. And somebody would like to know the name of your book.
Unique Kids, Unique Surroundings, and you can find it on Amazon.com, and you can find it on brushoflove.com. And I'm actually on a slide right now as it comes up showing you more specific pictures of plants for those who are looking, if that helps while we're talking.
Great.
You'll see the cornstalk dracanus is on the top right and the bottom right. And then you'll also see even the Gerber daisy, which is also another great house plant that feeds on chemicals in the air.
Very nice.
Now, really quickly, I'm just going to touch on lighting, so that you're aware. The light on the right, which is what's typically known for energy conservation, they're fabulous for energy conservation. However, what people don't realize is that they have mercury, and they will tell you that it's just a minimal amount and it can't hurt you like they used to tell you with cigarettes. I'm telling you, if you want to use them for wonderful energy savings, please use them in rooms where the kids cannot knock them over or touch them.
Which ones are you talking about?
The top, the one on the far right, these are the lights that are energy-saving light bulbs.
Okay.
And they have mercury in them, which means if they fall and they break, it's an issue. You have to, what you really need to do, and again, this is in my book, you have to put on two sets of gloves. You have to pick up the pieces and put them into one plastic bag and then another garbage bag and then a third, as recommended, and take them somewhere and drop them at a fill that allows mercury-related items. And once the mercury is in your home, even if it's minimal, you can't really get it out. So please only use them in areas where there aren't going to be a lot of kids messing with the bulbs so that you can change them. And use soft, white light bulbs or incandescent, LED lights or incandescent lights. The lights that you see here are lights that are a little more safe and easy to use now that they're much more readily available for the home as well.
There's a question from Nicole in Olive Branch. Is the Benjamin Moore natural safe for kids who have sensitivity to citric foods? My son gets sick when drinking lemonade but doesn't have a classic allergic reaction to it.
You know what? That's a great question. I've not been asked that question. So what I would say is I would typically assume it would be because he's just, it's a citrus base. However, I don't want to give you the wrong information. There are some other paints. Like I said, the Auraguard is low VOC. You can also look at the other paint companies, or the Fresh Air Choice might be a great one, which is at Home Depot. And also Google low VOC or non-citrus-based paints. And just double check with your pediatrician and see if he feels that a citrus-based paint would have an adverse reaction for your son or daughter.
Good question.
Great question. I'll look into that myself. Are there any other questions I could answer?
Yes, Haley from Nevada. My nonverbal child loves Winnie the Pooh and animals. Any color guesses for preference from that? Vibrant and primary, perhaps?
Well, the Winnie the Pooh series are usually colors that are not too, they're more, they're a little more subtle and subdued. But again, I would have them in her room in specific areas. In other words, I wouldn't do the entire room in Winnie the Pooh, including her, her comforter and her sheets and her pajamas. I would have maybe, one picture somewhere of Winnie the Pooh and maybe get her one pajama top with Winnie the Pooh, that kind of thing. Maybe get her a stuffed animal. I would stick, again, to the more subtle greens or yellows or blues or lavenders that are a part of the Winnie the Pooh series as the wall coloring. Maybe do one accent in a lavender, or even if she likes yellow, one of the more subtle yellows. But I would keep the colors very subtle and more pastel-oriented. And use some of the brighter colors as accents and not as the grand, color that you're going to use on all the walls. Keep those to the more subtle lavenders or, mint greens. You can even use those two colors together.
Right. Lynn in San Marcos, I am a teacher of elementary students with autism. Most of my students are nonverbal. How do you recommend that I test what emotions they feel when exposed to various colors?
Well, in terms of testing them, that kind of thing is so subjective. It might be even better to, I don't know if she's able to do this, but if you are able to spend any individual time, even if it's with an aide, showing, slides or even construction paper of colors, color construction paper, and see how they react on an individual basis. But just to be general and more cautious, I would, again, only use more subtle colors in the classroom and save the brighter colors for specific rewards or specific exciting maybe assignments or events that are coming up in the classroom. I wouldn't use those colors for anything other than something specific, and make sure it's clear what it represents, if it's good or if it's negative. I wouldn't use bright colors in any general way because more often than not, it is going to overstimulate. So I would really stick to middle-of-the-road colors for sustained energy and colors that are more pastel to keep them calmer and help them self-soothe. I hope that helps. But when you use any sort of color wheel with each of the children or even as a whole, they will react and they will let you know if it's something that they're excited about or if their face gets more kind of, you know, contorted in a negative way and their actions become more aggressive rather than more excitable. Usually there's at least a slight bit of discernment in their stimming reactions when they're showing their angst and when they're showing their excitement.
Interesting.
Does that help clarify a little bit?
I'm sorry?
I said, did that help to clarify a little bit?
I think so.
Great, great.
Somebody wanted to know, does depression or decreased affect affect color choice?
I'm sorry, say again?
Does depression or decreased affect affect the color choice?
I think it does, actually. If you're asking if somebody's already depressed and having that issue, I think it's really important to not just jump to an energetic color and say, oh, that'll make them feel better, because it can create more anxiety and aggression. And so then you have depression and aggression. If someone's already depressed, I think it's helpful to have positive, tranquil colors. Again, maybe you have a contrast of a light lavender with a brighter plum, or you have a warm red with a helpful brown that makes them cozy. But you want to be really careful of just generalizing, well, this is bright and happy and cheery, so it's going to cheer someone up, because people don't necessarily respond that way. They respond to the things that agitate and affect underneath, and you can't necessarily know that. As we learned a little earlier, bright colors really affect each of us very differently. So that's why journaling and really noticing how people react throughout their day, how they react to music, colors, lighting, sound, outdoors versus indoors is really important, and it really helps educate how to bring the things that work into your space, including sounds of nature, whether it be rain, wind, ocean. Some people find rain very soothing, and some people don't like it. It depresses them and makes them sad.
Mm.
You really want to pay attention to that kind of thing.
And some of us don't want to play water near our children because it tends to make them use the restroom more often.
Yeah, and that's something that affects all of us that way, by the way, depending whether it's subliminal or whether it's conscious. So you really, again, paying attention to the things that seem negligible and you know, like they're not going to make a difference, are actually the things that make the most difference. These are fundamental. They're not frivolous in any way, shape, or form.
So Barbara asks, how do you feel about large stripes for a bedroom?
How do I feel? Well, it's not for me, so it doesn't matter what I think. It really has to do with whose bedroom it is and, you know, on what scale you're going to use them. Can this person be a little more specific?
Well, we'll see if they write back in.
Okay.
You're listening.
Okay. How are we doing? I know we have a few minutes left. Are there questions unanswered? Or anything, Chantel, that you have to ask for you or Jeremy, or that you have to add?
Well, I wanted to say, because I've been listening, and it's very interesting, and okay, so now this is going to be information that people know about me privately, but I happen to move into a house, and it's nicely white paint. What happens is my husband and I always have a deal that we're only going to put up one or two paintings on the walls, and that eventually I'm going to get to paint the walls like a light, different colors depending, but very pale colors. Well, we never get around to painting, and, you know, parents of kids with autism will understand why, especially working parents.
Right.
And secondly, every time I turn around, my husband's hung up another painting. Now, we both love the arts, and we lived in Europe for a long time, and so we never got into collecting or buying good furniture just because it's expensive and you can't move it with you. But we would go to flea markets and find wonderful pieces of art for not very much money, and then we'd ended up over the years having them framed. And so I just feel like our house is too overly visually stimulating. So in Jeremy's room, it's funny because growing up, he never really showed preference for what he wanted on the wall. So his sister, who was a couple of years younger and who was very athletic, we would pick out with her sporting posters for Jeremy's room. One day we went in there, and he had ripped all the posters down. And so at that point, we were able, he was at a point where he could start pointing to yes and no and communicating things like that. And we realized he didn't want anything up. And the only picture he wanted up was the picture of the Charger cheerleaders.
Good for him.
I don't remember
guys
what
color. Guys will be guys.
Cheerleaders, little tiny outfits.
That's great.
But I do notice that it is important to him to have less stuff around. And even when he's working, because he does a lot of work at home.
Yeah.
Because he's older now, so he goes to community college and he works, he studies in different places. But we've had to take a lot of things out of his bedroom.
Yeah.
You know, of course, we ask his permission, we ask his opinion, but he's very clear about what he wants up and what he doesn't want up.
Yeah, less is definitely more, and especially with kids on the spectrum who are high functioning or et cetera and so forth, because their brains are working twice as fast as ours are. And that's the other thing. You know, they.
Right.
It's very hard to kind of understand or empathize or go where they are because you can't. Your brain just doesn't work at the level that theirs does. Just because they're wired differently socially doesn't necessarily mean that they're slower or they're not computing and or associating or, you know, eating up the information just like we are. So you have to be really on top of, as I said, the things that work for them, where they go, what they're focusing on, and what they feel is okay. It may be something he likes to see, but it doesn't necessarily, as long as it doesn't detract, and he's not going to necessarily know if it's detracting or not, that's helpful. But it's better to have what I call assistive technology in the room where these spaces, your home, ends up working for you like a personal assistant would. So the minute
right.
you walk into your office, the office is already buoying you into a zone that allows you to work more easily. Just like when you go into your bedroom would do the same or your kitchen, then that has to do with the way it's designed.
That's correct. So now it's time to go. We
that
only
was
have a
quick.
Couple... I know.
But I hope people got the information they were looking for and that I was able to answer as thoroughly as I could under the circumstances. Do you want me to mention how to reach
yes.
me, or would you like to do that?
Well, first I'll just mention again so that people will know that Lauren S. Henry was speaking, and she is from Brush of Love or Brush with Love. Remind me.
It's actually With the Brush of Love.
Okay.
Color expert, sensory design specialist, and you can reach me at www.brushoflove.com. My email is Lauren, Lauren, at brushoflove.com. And you can also join our fan page to keep up on our good news and our show Room to Be Different, at facebook.com/withabrushoflove. We're on Twitter as well. At Brush of Love. We keep everything as consistent as possible. So I certainly hope to hear from all of you and would like nothing more than to be able to assist and make your lives easier and empower parents to really see the differences they can make for themselves and their children with just a few easy changes.
Great. And I would like to remind people that this is a conference, Get Educated About Autism, put on by MomsFightingAutism.com, and I think we should have a shout-out to Ernest Priestley, who does this every year.
Absolutely.
Yes, it's a lot of work, and every year we get better at it, but it's MomsFightingAutism.com who puts this on. My company is co-sponsoring, which is AutismCollege.com, and if people have any questions or would like to check out Autism College, just Google autismcollege.com, and I'm mentioning that because a few people have emailed in or sent in questions having to do with my son, which I didn't answer because it didn't have to do with the topic right now.
Yeah.
But you can go on my website at autismcollege.com and ask me the questions, and I'll answer you. So, again, thanks to Ernest Priestley. Thanks so much, Lauren.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
And really, it was very informative and helpful.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. So, listeners, if you're going to be here again for the conference, I'll be talking to you again later today. Thank you. And until then, be the change that you want to see.